One of the fundamental teachings or principles of the Christian faith is the bodily return of Jesus Christ. His coming back, and that for some seems to be a surprise, and we're not told exactly when that's going to happen, but he's told us that it's going to be one of those things. The second coming of Christ, is it going to be in bodily form? And certainly it's one of those aspects that we celebrate. There are many prophecies about Jesus' first coming, and we see those throughout the first 39 books of the Old Testament. And certainly there were prophecies about His second coming, but much of the Old Testament, much of the first 39 books, are pointing to the fact of how sin entered into our world and that Jesus Himself was coming to deal with that particular problem. These prophecies are very, very precise. They're predictions about what Jesus would do and what He would be. You see, for individuals who say, well, you know, I'm not sure about the second coming, that sounds sort of mystical and mythical and make-believe and pretend. Well, in the Old Testament, all these stories about Jesus coming and the prophecies that were predicted about Him coming, hundreds and hundreds of years, very, very precise as to where He was to be born and when He was to be born and how He was to be born and how He was to live His life and how He was to go to a cross, how He was to be buried in a tomb that was a rich man and none of His bones would be broken, even though those on either side of Him would be broken, and though He was not going to be stoned to death, as was the Jewish way of dealing with that in the Old Testament, but that He would be pierced, all of those things, that He would die and rise again. There are all these prophecies pointing to the fact that Jesus was to come. And now we're on this side of the cross, and Jesus has come, and we're looking, as it were, at the aspect of the fact that Jesus has come, but there's something else going on, that we are now looking forward to His second coming. It was interesting, there was an article that I just read, although it was in December's Time magazine. In the very back of it, there are like 10 questions that are asked of someone, and the interviewer was interviewing Rick Warren. And in that interview, one of the questions he asked him on 2013, December 30th, I think is the article, asked him, he said, so what's your favorite time, Christmas or Easter? And Rick Warren said, well, both. And the interviewer, not really comprehending, said, well, that's not fair, that's a cop-out, give me one or the other. And Rick Warren said this, he said, well, you know, without Easter, Christmas makes no sense. And without Christmas, Easter could not have happened. And so those are tied together. And so the second coming of, you know, the first coming of Jesus dealt with the fact of dealing with our sin, providing for us and our failures by going to the cross. However, when we look forward to the second coming of Jesus in bodily form, we're now looking forward to the fact that He's going to come as King. He's not going to be coming in a means by which He is put to death or by which He is overcome by anyone else. He's coming as a conquering King, and He's also coming in judgment. Many people look at history as being cyclical. That is, that history just repeats itself. If you go back and read history, and sorry folks, but I was a history major in college, loved it. First year was, you know, the first semester, yeah, it was pretty boring. But once you get into it, man, there's some really great stories. But as we went through that process, there are individuals who think that it's just a cycle. You know, same things, same events happen over and over again. You change the names, you change the faces. Maybe you add a little bit more technology, but it really appears that it's cyclical. No, history is not cyclical, it's linear. That when what God is doing is He is bringing events to a conclusion, that there is something for which He is shooting for, and we read about those very specifically in the book of Daniel and in the book of Revelation and their other prophecies. And one of those major events that is now in the future, could be on the horizon, is the second coming of Jesus. You know, it's really easy for us to get caught up in so much of life, right? We go through the cycles of life, and you may feel somewhat like that history is cyclical in your life, that you're that hamster on the wheel. For some of you, it's getting up every morning maybe and eating breakfast and getting on a bus or driving to school, and you go to school and you go through the school day, and then you have sports in the afternoon, and you go back home, and then you open up your book and there's homework to do, and then you get that done and you go to bed, and it starts all over the next day, same thing, and life seems to be cyclical. For others of you, it's the fact that you get up and you do your breakfast and then you go off to work. And you work, you put in your time, you put in your effort, you get it done, you go home, you eat supper, you maybe interact with your family, you sit down, watch a little television, go to bed and start it all over again. And it just seems to be this continual cycle. For some of you who are new parents, You just, in that process of always being awake at night, you never get any sleep, and you're changing diapers and you're feeding babies, you know, and that seems, and you're hoping that someday, and you understand that someday you're going to be out of this, but right now, that's where you are. Is that all that life is about? Is getting stuck in those cycles, or is there something that we are called to do, some means in which we are called to live before God? The section that we're going to look at together this morning instructs us about what to do, how to live in between this time of Jesus' first coming and His second coming. Because that's where we are. So how do we live? What are we supposed to do? Certainly not the hamster on the wheel. That's not effective. And Jesus says for His people, for those who are His followers, He gives to us very specific instruction about how we are to live in this in-between time that you and I are to live ready. That's the theme. That's the message. That every day when we get up and go about our activities, that we need to live ready. And I invite you to grab a Bible, turn to Luke chapter 12. If you want to use a pew Bible, it's page 1038. Maybe it's starting to open there all by itself now. I don't know, because we've been in there for a while. But let me just back up for a moment, because maybe some of, you know, just to refresh our minds where we are in this study. In chapter 12, verses 1 through 12, we talked about authentic Christian living. What does it mean to live authentically before God? And we understand, in the very first few verses of chapter 12, Jesus says this to those who are His followers. He said, I don't want you to live as hypocrites. Which means it is possible for you and me as followers of Jesus to live hypocritically. And what Jesus meant by that is that we are in the process of being healed spiritually, but it doesn't mean we're perfect. People misunderstand. Oh, you go to church, or you're a follower of Jesus. How come you said that bad word? How come you lost your temper? Well, we're not perfect yet, and that's not being hypocritical, because we come, this is a hospital for us spiritually to learn, just as it's not hypocritical to go to the gym and see some out of shape folk who are on a treadmill. You know? That's not, they're trying to deal with it, or go to a hospital where people are sick. So Jesus said, we are not to be hypocrites, but we are to be growing. Secondly, in verses 13 to 21 of chapter 12, we looked at the aspect of what does it mean to live life. And the fact is that you and I can get caught up in a trivial pursuit. And it was a very successful farmer who had a lot of crops, and it was all started by a guy who said to Jesus, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me. You know, that he was focusing on money, and Jesus said, this money isn't all that there is to life. And this guy who was a very successful farmer said, well, I'm going to tear down my buildings and barns and granaries, and I'm going to put up bigger grain bins because I've got so much and I don't know what to do with it. And that night he was judged, not because he was successful, but because he was living life all in the immediate. He wasn't living ready. And then in verses 22 through 34, we were instructed, we spent some time last week, on prescription for worry or anxiety that we can face primarily there when dealing with money. And Jesus again instructs us that life is a whole lot more than what we wear and what we eat. So now as we look this morning, Jesus is instructing us within that context of how to live ready, to put together those preceding verses and to tell us this is what it looks like to live ready. So the first thing we're going to notice together is that living ready includes waiting correctly. Waiting correctly. And that's in verses 35 to 40. Now, I don't know about you, but I think hardly any of us enjoy waiting. Do you? I don't. And yet, Jesus tells us we need to wait correctly. Well, what does that look like? Well, there are three parts or three elements, three aspects of waiting correctly in verses 35 and 36. And Jesus says this, be dressed. That's the first one, is preparation, be dressed. If you're using a King James version, it says something to the effect about having your loins girded. That means be dressed. All right? And they would have long robes, they would tuck them up into their belt. That's what that meant. But it's the idea of be dressed and be ready. Don't be in your spiritual pajamas. If you go to Walmart and do any shopping there, you will find people in their pajamas. They are not ready to go shopping. They don't know it, but they are not. And so Jesus here is telling us that we need to be prepared, be dressed, and be ready for when He comes. The second element or aspect of waiting correctly is the last part of verse 35, and it deals with The first one was preparation. The second is maintenance. And he says, keep your lamps burning bright. Keep learning. Keep growing. Continue to be ready. Maintenance aspect of that. You know, it's like Motel 6. We always have the light on for you. And then verse 36 is the expectation. Be like the men who are waiting for their master when he returns from a wedding feast, that they may immediately open the door to him when he comes and when he knocks. And that day and that time, wedding feasts could go on for an extended period of time. You know, you didn't have a cell phone to say, hey, I'm going to be home at 10. I mean, a lot of times it went past 9 p.m., could have gone on at 10 or 11 p.m., and you didn't call ahead. And so what this individual is saying, what Jesus is saying here, just be ready so that when he shows up, you're ready to open the door and let him in. Just be ready. It's expectation. So the three elements, preparation, you make sure we're spiritually dressed. Secondly, maintenance, make sure that we are learning, we're growing, we're being prepared. And then thirdly, expectation. Expect that Jesus is going to come back. That's part of waiting correctly. You know, it isn't a matter of going and sitting in the easy chair and thinking, well, you know, he might show up someday, and when he does, that's okay. It's be ready. And Jesus says there's a reward for waiting correctly. Look at it, verse 37 and 38. Blessed are those whose slaves whom the master finds on alert when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will gird himself, he will wrap himself, he will prepare himself to serve and have them recline at a table and come and wait on them. And whether he comes in the second watch or the third watch and finds them, they're going to be blessed. So the thing that's interesting here is that, in other words, Jesus refers to himself as in the third person, but he's talking about himself, that he's going to come back. And he says, you know, you need to be ready. And if you come and I find you ready, I'm going to serve you. Jesus is going to take on that form and he's going to serve us. I don't know what all that means. We're not told. It gets into speculation. A lot of ideas, but it's a good thing. So Jesus is going to serve those who are his people and those who have been waiting properly. And there's an extra blessing, you say, in the verse 38, especially those who are in the second and third watch. You know, the third watch was, you know, you look at it, started about 9 p.m. and went on. I mean, it depends on if you're talking Roman or Jewish, which isn't all that, but it's like late. You know, when somebody says, I'm going to come, and you go, okay, so you really, we can really stay awake. I'm going to come home, 5 or 6 p.m., 7 p.m., And then by about 9 or 10, well, you know, they may not be coming tonight. Or 11 or 12, they may not be coming tonight. And Jesus says, just be ready, especially those who are waiting when it gets late. And I think that really includes us, because it's been about 2,000 years since Jesus made this statement. And we look around us, I mean, it might be that we are in the second, third watch. It could be a while longer, but may not be. We don't know. And so Jesus says here, just wait correctly. Wait for him. And there's a warning also about how we wait. Don't wait incorrectly. Don't wait unprepared in verses 39 and 40. It's the thief motif that we find in verses 39 and 40. But be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have allowed his house to be broken into. You too be ready, for the Son of Man, that's Jesus, is coming back in an hour when you don't expect it. Now, that is not saying that Jesus is going to come and steal your stuff. That is not what this passage is saying. What it is saying is that you need to be prepared, you know, just as somebody is prepared to protect and guard their home. Because you don't know, a thief doesn't announce when they're coming. They don't tell you, well, hey, I'm going to come to your house at 1 a.m. in the morning or 1:05 a.m. in the morning. If you got that message from the thief, you would be ready for him. Whatever that means for you. I read a story, it's a true story, it happened a number of years ago in England, and a couple went out from their house and noticed that their car had been stolen. Of course, they reported it and went about their day, and they came back home and nothing there, and they went to bed, and the next day they woke up and went outside, and there's their car. And whoever took it put a note in it and said, I'm sorry if there was any inconvenience to you for stealing your car, and I just want to make it up to you. Here are two tickets for tomorrow night's theater, 7 p.m. I thought, well, that's really a generous act. So they went and drove to the theater the next night and got there, and when they got home, their house had been burgled. Guess who? You know, they weren't prepared. They didn't see it coming. And so Jesus says, be on your guard, work. Wait correctly. Now, there are a lot of people that put a lot of charts and graphs together. You know, when is Jesus going to come back? And they've got this elaborate stuff, and they've got it all worked out, and they spend a lot of time on it. That's not what Jesus asks us to do. You know, there are a lot of bits and pieces. You know, is it pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib? You know, and is it, you know, is it sort of pre-wrath, or is it what? Jesus doesn't go into all that here. He's just saying, just be ready. The charts and the graphs and all those things, that's not what we're to get involved in. And people can waste a lot of time drawing it all out and getting it all there. And then we're going to look at this graph, and but they're not ready because they spent so much time in this. Or trying to set a date. Had any of those folks? There's a name that maybe you are familiar with. He was in the news for a while and he has now passed on. And a guy by the name of Harold Camping. He said it a couple times. You know, first time it didn't work out for him, so he said it again a little bit later, October something, whatever. And that didn't happen for him. And he was really, really disappointed. And, well, you know, so you can't really know the day or the hour, but I sort of kind of think I can get the day or the hour. It's like, wait a minute, that's what Jesus said. He said you can't know it. A guy by the name of Wisenot back in 1988. 88 reasons why Jesus is coming in 88. He had a sequel, part two. 89 reasons why Jesus is coming in 89. That sold even worse. Don't set dates, just be ready. That's what Jesus is saying. It's not a matter of trying to go out, let's look and let's set the dates. But Jesus says, you know, as you look around, you'll see events that help us understand that it could be really, really soon. And we've actually been living in the last days ever since Jesus left. First Peter talks about the fact that we're living in the last days. But we may now be in the second or third watch. So Jesus says, in this in-between time, I want you to live ready, and it includes waiting correctly. But there's a second element, because it isn't just waiting. It's also working rightly. We're not just to wait, but we're to work. Look at verses 41 through 48. Now Peter asks a question in verse 41. Peter says to him, Lord, are you addressing this parable to us or to everyone else? Because you recall, the disciples are there and there's a great crowd around. If you go back to the beginning of the chapter, there, this great crowd's trampling on everybody. And so Peter says to him, Lord, are you talking to us as followers of Jesus, of you, or are you talking to everybody else out there? And Jesus doesn't answer his question. In essence, he says, yes. Yes. Who are you talking to, them or us? Yes. Because this peace is for every single human being. Whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, maybe you're still learning, you're not there yet, you're trying to figure this out. What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? What does God want us to do? What does it mean to have a right relationship with Christ? I'm not talking about religion. So what does that look like? So this passage is for you. For those of us who've come to understand who Jesus is and what He's done and put our personal faith and trust in Him, this passage is for us. This isn't a matter that we say, well, you know, that's for Israel and this is for the Christians and that's for Jews and this is for Gentiles. No, it's for us. So how do we work rightly? Well, first of all, we need to be a faithful servant in verses 42 and 43. And the Lord said, who then is the faithful and sensible steward whom his master will put in charge of his servants to give them their rations at the proper time? Blessed is the servant or slave whom the master finds so doing when he comes. Blessed is the one that when Jesus comes is doing exactly what they've been called to do. What is it that you've been called to do? What is it that I've been called to do? Go to work. Raise your family for Christ. Be involved in aspects, some of which have been shared this morning. What is it that God wants you to do? May 19, 1780 is known as New England's Dark Day. You can look it up if you want to, but what happened, there have been forest fires up in Canada, and on that particular day, the smoke and had all moved down into Connecticut, and it had blocked out pretty much the sun and had put a really dark haze over all of the Connecticut, and what took place is you looked at the sun, it just sort of looked like blood red through all the fog and the smoke. And the New England legislator was meeting that day. And when the sun all of a sudden turned dark and they couldn't see, they thought, you know, maybe this is the end of the world. Because you didn't pick up a cell phone and say, hey, what's Chicago like? You know, tell us what's going on. I mean, they didn't have that kind of communication. So the legislature there in Connecticut said, you know, maybe this is the end of the world. Maybe this is it. Maybe, I wonder what we should do. And there was a Christian man named Abraham Davenport who was there in the legislature. And they looked to him and said, what should we do? Should we go home to our family? Should we pack up everything? What should we do? And Davenport basically said, well, let's do what God has called us to do. He's called us here together today to act on behalf of Connecticut. So that's our assignment for today. If he comes back today, we're going to be doing what he called us to do. We don't need to go home. We just need to do what he's called us to do. So he may come back today, and this may be the end of the world as we know it. Then we're doing what he called us to do. If it isn't, then we've done what we've been instructed to do. And that's the point. So this aspect of living ready and doing what God has called me to do, has it affected in any way a phone call I made? Has it affected an email or a text that I sent? Has it affected in any way a decision that I've made? Has it affected any way in which I've kept my mouth shut or opened it when I should have or kept it shut when I shouldn't have said something? You know, does it affect me in any way? And so Jesus is saying to live ready means not only waiting, but working rightly. And so that's the benefit of one who is following Jesus and doing what we've been instructed to do. That when he shows up, we're doing what we've been called to do. And that might be changing a diaper. That might be giving a bottle. That might be teaching a class. That might be running a machine. That might be driving a truck. That might be, you can fill in the blank, sitting at a desk in school, doing what God has called you to do. But then there's also a word of warning that comes along, because not only can we be a faithful servant, but we could be unfaithful. And Jesus addresses that in verses 45 to 48. First of all, he says in verse 45, and by the way, verse 44 is an encouragement. You be found doing what you're supposed to be doing, and Jesus is going to put you in charge of other things. Why? You've been faithful. You've been faithful. You've done what you've been instructed. And then in verse 45 begins some warnings. But if that slave says in his heart, my master will be a long time in coming, and begins to beat the slaves, both men and women, and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of the slave will come on that day when he does not expect him, and an hour when he does not know it will cut him in pieces and sign him a place with unbelievers. That doesn't sound good. And of course the question is, is that me? Who's referred to here? Because that doesn't sound like a good thing. You know, again, there's some discussion about it. I don't think we want to just automatically throw it out and say, well, that doesn't include me. But I really think that what Jesus is doing here is talking to the religious leaders of his day, the Pharisees who are standing there, religious people, and they're teaching false doctrine. They're teaching false things. They're saying religion is about doing stuff to earn God's favor. And the longer your list of do's and don'ts, not biblical stuff, but the longer list of do's and don'ts that you have, the more spiritual you are. So they're false teachers. They're leading others astray. That's why I think what he says here, those who are servants leading, abusing other servants. I think by application or implication, that certainly is effective for today for those who are pastors and teachers who are telling people, hey, don't worry about it. God's really pleased with you. Everybody gets to heaven. Just like all dogs go to heaven, all people go to heaven, you know? And so there's not really anything bad. You just try and really be good and it'll all work out nicely. And it's, you know, put a little money in the offering plate if that helps. But just keep on going. So it's false. See, James 3:1 says, don't many of you be teachers. Why? Because you're going to receive a stricter judgment. Whenever I come across those words, I'm ready to turn in my prophet's badge. Somebody else do it, you know. It's really serious to tell somebody, this is what God says, this is how you get to heaven, this is God's truth. And if we never tell them about who Jesus is and what he came to do and that we have fallen short and we can't get there on our own, that's really, really serious. And I think that's what Jesus means here. There's another group, verse 47, those who knew but didn't do. You know, the And it says in verse 47, "And the slave who knew his master's will and did not get ready or act in accord with his will receive many lashes." Okay, I know what God wants me to do, but I'm not going to do it. There's severe discipline. And there's a third group of individuals, those who didn't know and didn't do. Verse 48, "But the one who did not know and committed the deeds worthy of flogging will receive few." So somebody who doesn't know as much of God's truth and therefore they don't respond, they get disciplined, but it's not as bad as someone who knew and didn't do. This one didn't know and didn't do. There's still a responsibility there. I was talking with someone recently who went through, it's over Christmas, I think. No, it was on a Saturday. And they were driving down through in another town, and you know how these speed cameras are all coming up? Well, guess what? You know, I mean, this is on a Saturday. Nothing there saying, you know, school, this is for year-round kind of thing. And so I thought, well, you know, no school, no whatever. I'm going to drive through. Yeah, sure enough, showed up in the mailbox. $40 you owe. But I didn't know. Unfortunately, they didn't let him off because he didn't know. But that's the point. So someone might be tempted to say, okay, if it means that I get worse discipline if I know, then I don't want to know. I'm going to put my fingers in my ear, right? I'm going to stop coming to church. I don't want to know because then I only get a few beatings. Well, that's one approach. May I suggest another? How about coming and learning what Jesus wants us to do so that we can go out and be a faithful servant and get blessed instead of beaten? I like that option better. So we learn together and we grow together because Jesus says the one who lives ready by waiting ready and working ready is the one who receives his blessing. Jesus comes to serve. In fact, you'll notice the last part from everyone, verse 48. Who has been given much, much will be required, and to whom has been entrusted much of him, they'll be asked even more. So the idea, if you've been faithful, God's going to give you more. And I don't mean financially, wealth, and that stuff. But I mean, we get to serve him when he comes. We get to serve. And so Jesus says to us, we need to live ready. We need to wait ready. We need to work ready. So what does that mean for you? Well, for maybe some of you, it's the fact that you've never really trusted Christ yet. You keep thinking about, well, you know, someday I need to do that. I'll think about trusting who Jesus is, or I'll find out a little bit more about it. Well, no, you need to take that step now, not tomorrow. Well, I'll do it tomorrow, mañana. You know, tomorrow. No, we don't know when Jesus is coming. Tomorrow could be too late. That all of us have on our calendar an appointment with Jesus. Now, he hasn't revealed that to me. When I open up my digital calendar, it's not on there. Except I remember the fact that Jesus said, I'm not telling you when, but I'm coming. Just as I came the first time and fulfilled prophecy, I am going to come the second time. So we need to trust who Jesus is. And what he's done, that religion doesn't get us to heaven. It keeps us from that because we think that's what makes it effective. So if you haven't done that, you're not really sure, maybe you still have some questions, be delighted. To sit down with you and explain to you who Jesus is, what he's done, so that you can be ready. You can start on this journey. For others of you, maybe you've already trusted Christ. Now what? Well, we can't postpone faithfulness, not procrastination. Can't say, well, you know, I'm a poor college student. I don't have a lot of money, or I don't have a lot of time. I've got a young family. What is it that God's calling you to do? For some of you who've trusted Christ, maybe that first step needs to be baptism. I'm not talking about, you say, well, I was baptized as an infant. That's not what the Bible talks about baptism. That's kind of like wearing a wedding band before you really get married. The wedding band doesn't make you married. It's an indication. It's a symbol of something that has happened. You know, being baptized before you trusted Christ really doesn't do anything more. But, and don't misunderstand, baptism doesn't get us into heaven, but it is a step of obedience. Jesus said, I want you to do this. You need to do this. Because one day you're going to stand before Jesus. He's going to say, well, why didn't you do this? Well, I thought I could do it tomorrow. Maybe it's a fact of sharing Christ. There's somebody within your sphere that needs to know Jesus, and we're thinking, well, tomorrow I'll tell them about Jesus, or next week, or maybe when they're a little more open, or when I have a little more time, or maybe we just need to tell them about Jesus. How about investing in people for Jesus' sake? That's what we looked at last week. Remember, selling stuff and investing for Jesus' sake? I mean, many of you have done that this past year. I mean, I realize that what Jeff showed up here, you know, there's a lot other investment in people's lives than what happened through Valley Grace. Some of you have done it individually, and that's a great thing. So we invest in people because we're living ready. How about serving? Serving in a church or serving in a community for Jesus' sake, not philanthropic or because the school requires you to do so much social service and you got to do that in order to graduate. Maybe some of you have been thinking, you know, someday I ought to go up to Urban Hope on that weekend, that carnival where they shut down the streets so that they can share Jesus. And you're thinking, someday I ought to do that. Well, why not this year? Someday I ought to go to Kentucky and be involved in missions down there and help a church as they do. We do manual stuff down there so they might be able to be involved in reaching their community. Why not this week or this year? You know, so why not? So I need to step up and I need to lead my family in prayer and devotions. Someday. Why not today? You see, the application is for all of us that we live ready. What is it that God wants you to do? What is it that He wants me to do that He's really made really, really clear? And I keep saying, well, tomorrow. Next week. Next year, I'll have things in order. I'll have things, you know, better organized and I'll be able to... No. What about today? So what's your next step? Maybe there's something you need to stop doing. Maybe there's something you need to start doing. Maybe there's someone you need to reconcile with. I read a story of a guy who said, well, I hope nothing bad happens to me soon because I need to go talk to him. I got to deal with this issue that's between us. Well, why not today? And you might come to the end of the journey and we say, well, you know, and there have been some of our dear folk who've gone on to glory. You know, and they've been doing this. They've been living ready, and they come to the end of the journey, and they step into the presence of Jesus. They didn't waste this. They lived ready, you see. So living ready, even if Jesus doesn't come during our lifetime, is not wasted time. It's preparation for that calendar event that every single one of us will stand before Jesus face to face. So Jesus calls us to live ready by ready waiting and ready working in the sphere in which He's placed us. Let's pray. Father, Jesus is really clear about what He wants us to do. We really can't say we didn't know. And every single one of us look into our lives and there are areas that we need to get ready in. We need to get dressed in that waiting. We need to prepare properly. And Father, the areas also of work that we need to do. Not because we're working our way into heaven, but because we're left here to accomplish what Jesus wants us to do before He comes back the second time. We're not called to sit down and argue charts and graphs about future events, but to live ready in a world that needs to know Jesus. Father, thanks for each one here. Thank You for the desire that they have to apply what is learned. And Father, may we make a difference for You in a world as we live ready, as we look for the coming of Jesus. In His name we pray. Amen.